This is Jamin Baxter, and I serve as Business Development Director for Moody Radio. The only reason we're able to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ on the radio is because of financial support from listeners like you. We also have businesses support us too, like United Faith Mortgage. Faith and family is at their core. It's why they choose to be such a close partner with our station. It's why they specifically advertise on Christian radio stations across the country. It's why father and son John and Ryan still lead the company to this day. Check out United Faith Mortgage and their direct lender advantage at unitedfaithmortgage.com. Thanks to you and to United Faith Mortgage for supporting Moody Radio.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp., 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Corporate NMLS number 1330. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Utah.
This is Jamin Baxter, and I serve as Business Development Director for Moody Radio. The only reason we're able to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ on the radio is because of financial support from listeners like you. We also have businesses support us too, like United Faith Mortgage. Faith and family is at their core. It's why they choose to be such a close partner with our station. It's why they specifically advertise on Christian radio stations across the country. It's why father and son John and Ryan still lead the company to this day. Check out United Faith Mortgage and their direct lender advantage at unitedfaithmortgage.com. Thanks to you and to United Faith Mortgage for supporting Moody Radio.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp., 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Corporate NMLS number 1330. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Utah.
Today's the day you've decided to take the bull by the horns and begin earnestly to pay off your credit cards and other debt. Good for you. Hi, I'm Rob West. Now that you're committed to getting out of hock, you've got two great options for doing it. I'll talk about that first today and which might be better for you. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. Call that number 24/7, 800-525-7000. This is MoneyWise Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. You regular listeners have probably figured out that we're talking about the snowball method of paying down debt and its big brother, the avalanche method. Now, don't get me wrong, both of these approaches are great, and whichever one you choose will help you get out of debt in a hurry. But which one is best for you, and which one saves you the most money? It's not necessarily the same answer. We usually recommend the snowball method, for reasons I'll explain in a minute. But first, let's define these terms in case you're new to this. The snowball method of debt reduction is probably the better known of the two. Our friend Dave Ramsey has been singing its praises for years on his program. Here's how it works. First, you pay the minimum monthly payment on all of your debts. You're probably doing that already because you have to. But then you apply any leftover money to the debt with the smallest balance. To be clear, that's in addition to the minimum payment you're already making on that debt. This would be extra money put on your smallest debt so it gets paid off first. Then once that debt is paid off, you take its monthly minimum payment and the extra you were sending and apply that to your next smallest debt. When that's paid off, you put all of that money on the next smallest, and so on, till all the debt is gone. You get the idea of a snowball rolling down the hill, getting bigger and faster as it grows. With the snowball method, you get quick wins up front, and that's really encouraging. You start to see progress right away. Another advantage is that you have more and more money to use as you move on to larger and larger debts. So the snowball method really is great for paying off debt. But the question is it the best? Let's compare that to the avalanche method. It's similar, but with an important distinction. Just as you would do with the snowball approach, you make the mandatory minimum payments on all your debts. But instead of taking your leftover money and applying it to your smallest balance, you put it on the debt with the highest interest rate. When that's paid off, you apply its payment and the leftover to the next highest interest rate, and so on. Now, the difference is more than just lowest balance versus highest interest rate. With the Avalanche method, you get a slower start on seeing progress. It'll probably take you longer to pay off the highest interest debt than the one with the lowest balance. So it'll be a while before you get a psychological boost. That said, the momentum does build with the Avalanche method as you get to the end of your debts. You again have a lot of cash available and you're taking big bites out of what you still owe. So back to the question, which is better? Well, that depends on you. Do you need to see the progress you're making? If so, you want the snowball method because the results are more immediate and tangible. Like we said, you start getting wins early, and that's encouraging. But some people think more in the abstract, and they're content with watching the numbers and seeing the balances go down each month. They don't mind if it takes longer to get a win. They want to make sure they pay the least amount of interest overall. And the Avalanche approach gives you that. Let's say you've got a half dozen debts ranging from $1,000 to $10,000, and they have interest rates from 6.5% to 18%. Both the snowball and Avalanche methods will pay off all of the debt in a little over 4 years with around $8,000 in total interest. But the Avalanche approach, paying off the highest interest first, will save you a couple of $100 in interest. So now you're thinking, why recommend the snowball approach when it means paying more interest? Well, because studies have shown that the best approach is the one you're most likely to complete. And that turns out to be the snowball approach, paying off your smallest debt first. You see, it doesn't matter if you might save $200 by paying off your highest interest debt first if you get discouraged and quit, which you're more likely to do with the Avalanche. And that's why we say go with the snowball. Get the quick wins, pay off your smallest debt first, and then go on to the next, and don't worry about the interest rates because you're more likely to stay motivated that way. And the key is to get out of debt once and for all. But whichever method you choose, let us know how it's going. We'd love to hear from you. And by the way, once you get that debt paid off, make sure you get on that spending plan using the MoneyWise app so you don't ever go back into debt again. All right, your calls are next. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Thanks for joining us on MoneyWise Live. We're so glad to have you along with us today. I'm Rob West, your host. In just a moment, we'll be heading to the phones to take your calls and questions on anything financial. Perhaps you want to talk about where we began today, and that is, how do you effectively pay off debt? Well, we'd love to tackle that with you. Today, we teed up two different approaches, the Avalanche method, which may be new to some of you, and the snowball method, which has been talked about for quite some time. We'd love to unpack that, or perhaps you want to talk about saving for the future, developing a spending plan. Whatever it is, we'll take a biblical approach to helping you move forward with confidence. Here's the number, 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open, 800-525-7000. Before we go to the phones, let me just say a huge thank you to the MoneyWise Live community for your participation in our fall share last week here on Moody Radio. What an incredible blessing to see God's people respond to keep the gospel loud and clear through Moody Radio, literally to the ends of the earth. We are so grateful for your involvement. So many new supporters of this ministry, many of you who have been regular supporters, right there standing with us. At all levels, it was God's people coming together to do this great work, and we are so very grateful. And certainly appreciate the many kind comments we saw regarding MoneyWise as well. All right, let's take your phone calls today. We're going to head to the lines. Again, we've got a few lines open here at 800-525-7000. We'll begin today in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Marie. How can I help you?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
My question is, I heard that it was possible for someone to steal the title to someone else's house. I was wondering if that's true, and if it is, how can we prevent it from happening to us?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Marie, there are so many ways that fraud is happening these days, especially with more and more transactions being conducted online and more ways that thieves are really thieves are coming in and stealing from so many, especially preying on elderly folks. This has gotten a lot of attention lately because of some products that are out there claiming that they can protect you from this. I'm not so sure, and I'm not a fan of these. Let me just tell you kind of how this works. Essentially, someone could stroll into the county deeds office and essentially fake your signature, thereby transferring your deed to someone else and then taking out a loan against the property. Could that happen? Not likely, but conceivable. The protection, though, that these companies offer really just doesn't live up to the hype. Now, this isn't what's typically known, Marie, as title insurance. You should always get title insurance when you purchase a property. That will protect you against any claim involving the validity of your ownership of the property. It's a one-time purchase, usually several hundred dollars. What, though, is called title theft insurance is a completely different product, and it really isn't insurance at all. It doesn't lock your title either, as the name would imply. Essentially, what happens is they monitor whether your deed has been transferred out of your name at the county records office. There is actually no way to lock your title in any state, at least not yet. Now, why I don't believe you need to take this on is because you can monitor whether a fraudulent transfer has occurred yourself. Most counties now allow you to view the status of your deed online. Some will even allow you to sign up for automated alerts involving deed changes, which would be most like what's being offered here. But keep in mind, even if this were to happen, Marie, this is fraud. If someone forges your signature, transfers your deed, and then takes out a loan against it, it's still fraud. So the con artist at that point didn't legally own your property, and therefore the new lender doesn't have a legal claim to it. If they tried to foreclose on you, it would be wrongful foreclosure and wouldn't hold up in court. So from my standpoint, I don't think you need to pay for a product that's essentially going to do what you can do yourself. You likely already have title insurance. It's just kind of an automatic when you buy a home or take out a new mortgage. And when that's in place at that transaction, that's really all the protection you need. And, you know, if you want to stay on top of this, I would check with your county deed office and just see if you can get an automated alert. And therefore, if somebody attempted to fraudulently change the deed, then you would be notified at that point. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. Makes me feel a lot better, too.
Okay. Very good. Well, we appreciate you checking in with us today. Thanks for listening to the program. May the Lord bless you. You have a great day. Let's head south, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, Winston. How can I assist you?
Oh, good afternoon. I loaned some money to a family friend, and now he's telling me that he's broke. So I says, well, why don't you take it from your retirement account? He says, no, you cannot until he gets to retirement age. And from what I understand, you can always take money from a retirement account, and they give you a time frame to put it back. If you don't put it back, then you pay a penalty. So the question is there a retirement account that you cannot take money from, period?
No. I mean, with a few exceptions, you know, if you had a pension, there may not be a way to get access to that money. But any self-directed retirement account, like a 401k, a 403b, a SEP IRA, traditional or Roth, you can, in fact, take it out. I don't recommend it, though. I would use that as an absolute last resort, you know, in terms of looking for funds to cover a short-term issue. Most notably, the reason is because often you would be treating the symptom of a problem as opposed to the problem. You know, usually money issues are symptomatic of other deeper issues like living within your means, or they may even be heart related. So, you know, I wanted you to tackle those first and make sure that you've reined in the spending and done what needs to be done to correct the problem. Otherwise, that temporary fix by pulling money out of a retirement account is going to result in less funds available for retirement, growing for the future, a pretty hefty tax bill potentially, and you know, the issue will probably resurface 6 months or a year later because you haven't solved the main issue. In terms of what's available, I mean, basically, yeah, if you take money out of those self-directed accounts before 59 and a half, you would have a 10% penalty on top of the funds likely being taxable. So, you know, you could be talking 35% or more right off the top. The only funds you would have access to without any kind of penalty would be a Roth IRA, where you're taking out your original contributions, not the gain, but the original contributions. You can access those funds without any penalty or tax consequence. But again, I would rather you not do that, because the whole point of that is to put something away that can grow for the future. So hopefully that answers your question, but I would encourage him not to take that approach and see if he can't solve the problem by, you know, really dialing back his lifestyle, focusing on his spending plan, and trying to perhaps come up with the funds another way. Does that all make sense, though, Winston?
One more question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this retirement? That's TCDRS?
Well, no, it's probably a local retirement. Is that based in Texas?
Correct.
Yeah. But so it's just the retirement system of a particular county. What's your question specifically related to that?
No, I was talking to my son, and he says, you know, this particular retirement account, TCDRS retirement account, you're not able to touch it, period.
Yeah. And that very well. That could be the case. Yeah, it's going to depend on the retirement account, whether it's self-directed or whether the funds were going in on your behalf automatically, whether it's a pension or what type of account it is. So that's entirely possible, Winston, that those funds are not accessible whatsoever.
All right, I won't hold you up anymore. Thank you very much for answering my question. God bless
you. All right, sir. We appreciate your call today. May the Lord bless you. Well, folks, so glad to have your calls today, and we've got room for many more, so we'd love to hear from you. Whatever's on your mind today, we'll take a biblical perspective and try to help you move forward, answer the questions that you have, no matter what your financial issue is today. Here's the number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is MoneyWise Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Stay with us. Much more to come just around the corner. Be right back. Thanks for tuning in to MoneyWise Live. I'm Rob West, your host. All the lines are full, so sit back and enjoy. We've got some great questions lined up coming your way in just a moment. Schaumburg, Illinois, but first, Austin, Texas. Hello, Becky. How can I assist you?
Hi. I've always been committed to debt-free living, and I recently got married, and my husband plan for retirement is flipping homes. So we took out a loan on our house to get started. And I wanted to pay it off, and he said we need to keep it open for like a line of credit and to be able to keep borrowing money to buy investment homes and rent them out. And I just wondered, how do you know when is too much?
Sure.
To extend yourself in that arena.
It's a great question, and obviously I'd love for you all to be able to do this without encumbering your primary residence for investment purposes, especially if you're not both on the same page. Because when we run through kind of the rules for borrowing, if you will, we want to make sure that the money is being used for productive purposes economically, that the economic cost is less than the economic gain, that there's not any disagreement between husband and wife. And, you know, there's a series of things we want to move through. And so for you all to take on debt, I really do want you to be on the same page. And to the extent either of you is uncomfortable with it, you know, that would be a warning sign for me that we need to perhaps hit the pause button. And, you know, I realize you all may be able to do this effectively. Perhaps he has some experience in this, and I realize you're trying to generate retirement income, but, you know, I don't want you to get overextended by any means, especially in a red hot real estate market that could turn over, you know, here in a year or two. So I just want you to proceed carefully. Tell me how the first one has worked out. How much did you borrow, and what's happening from a cash flow standpoint?
Well, it went really well. We bought it and sold it and made a good profit, which we have used to start our own business. So we weren't able to use any of the money to pay off the debt, but it did. It was like a good first, you know, sign. So I propose the next one we do, we use to put towards our pay off our debt. And, but he kind of said, well, let's just keep getting more houses. And so I just didn't know, when do you know when that's too much? Like, kind of what's a marker for real estate investment?
Yeah. Well, I'd love for you to go into a real estate investment with at least 50% of your own cash. Just because, you know, as we look at investment properties, we're going to have higher interest rates associated with them. In a market like this, you're likely paying a premium for the purchase in the first place. And given the fact that you're, you know, encumbering your primary residence, then it's no longer kind of purely a business situation because now your personal finances are involved. Whereas if you were to get loans on the properties themselves and you were able to demonstrate that you could go in with enough cash, which means you've got savings and reserves to put toward that, and they begin to cash flow, then you can kind of separate, if you will, the business side of your real estate investing from your personal finances. And as long as the debt service is covered, plus taxes and insurance and, you know, routine maintenance, and you've got a fund there to kind of cover all of that, then, you know, you could always liquidate those properties and take care of that. But the moment you begin to get your personal finances involved without a good cushion under you, that's where I start to get concerned. So given the fact that you took the proceeds and the profit from this property, you didn't pay off the mortgage, you put it into a business. Now, what's going on with that business? And are you all having to come out of pocket to service the debt at this point?
The business is just in the beginning stages, but I think it's growing and going well. But I just kind of trying to gauge at what point do you need to. So are you saying you agree that it would be wise to pay off the equity from our personal home before we proceed in more investment properties?
I am. Yeah. I would rather you do that, especially with, you know, taking this and plowing it into a new business. And, you know, new businesses always take longer than we expect to cash flow. They always take more money than expected. And, you know, it doesn't sound like you have a real significant reserve underneath you that, you know, if things take, you know, more investment to get them going in things like marketing or equipment or, you know, whatever it is, and or we see a, you know, softening in the economy, that's where things, you know, can begin to get out of hand quickly. And so you all continuing to pile on more and more debt to your primary residence without taking care of the debt, you know, along the way, you know, gives me a real concern. So I think, you know, it's fine if you want to take the proceeds and plow it into a new business. But if that means also then adding more debt to your primary residence so you can buy another property, I'd caution against that just based on what I'm hearing about your own personal finances and your ability to fund that. I would prefer you, you know, take care of that existing debt before you add another penny for another property.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome, Becky. Thanks for calling and listening. God bless you. On to Schaumburg, Illinois. Hi, Tori. How can I assist you?
Hi. I was calling in because I am at retirement age, and I don't think I'm able to retire at this point. So I have about $5,000, and I was wondering, what would be my advantage to investing the $5,000 toward my retirement?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's do this. We're headed toward a break, but I've got the lay of the land here. So just on the other side of this break, I'll give you my thoughts on how to think about investments as you're just getting started thinking about retirement and you've got a little bit of money to put to work for you. So you hold the line. We'll be back with you in just a moment. We've got a few lines open, 800-525-7000, perhaps one's for you. We'll be back with much more just around the corner. Stay with us. Thanks for tuning in to MoneyWise Live. I'm Rob West, your host. This is Biblical Wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head back to the phones. Tori is in Schaumburg, Illinois. Just before the break, Tori was explaining that she has reached retirement age, but not planning on retiring anytime soon. And Tori, it sounds like you've put aside about $5,000 and you're looking to invest that for, you know, the benefit of being able to access that down the road. Do you have a certain amount that you could put aside in addition to that each month?
Yes, probably so, yeah.
What do you, got a little bit of background noise there. What do you think your margin is each month?
Yeah, how much I'm driving, so I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay.
I want you to be safe, so I'll let you just listen and focus on the road. Here's my thought. You know, first of all, the very best place to invest for retirement would be a company-sponsored plan. So if you have access to a company-sponsored retirement plan, especially if there's matching, but even if not, I'd see if you could set that up and try to put as much as you can away. A goal would be 10 to 15% of your pay automatically into that account. If you can't do that, then you'd back down from there. If you don't have access, Tori, to a company-sponsored plan, then another great option would be a Roth, heading into retirement, I'd probably use a traditional IRA. That's going to give you a current year tax deduction based on the amount that you contribute, so it's going to reduce your taxable income as you make a contribution. And if you're over the age of 50, you could put in $7,000 for this year, and then you could do another $7,000 next year and beyond. So that would give you the ability to put that money away and get it working for you and get a little bit of a tax benefit in the meantime. You know, as you think about investing those funds, I'd probably check with our friends at soundmindinvesting.org. They have a wonderful resource that would give you mutual fund suggestions that are low cost, very high quality. You'd be very well diversified, even with that $5,000, and then that money could begin to grow, so you'd have something down the road. And if you don't plan to retire anytime soon, as long as you have a 10-year time horizon, then I would say go ahead and get that invested and then be systematic, perhaps every month, of putting in, you know, if you could do $500 a month, great. But I'd look for that company-sponsored plan first and then use the traditional IRA as your second option. And I hope that helps you. All the best to you in the days ahead. On to Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Judy. How can I help?
Hey there. We have about maybe $50 savings bonds that probably five of them are matured. And I guess my question is, with the government the way it is and the economy, I'm just afraid that for some reason they're not really going to get backed when they do mature. And should we go ahead and cash them in or just keep holding on to them?
Well, I appreciate the question, Judy. You know, I would probably cash them in if I were you, not because I would be concerned that the government won't back them, but just because of the interest that you're accruing. You know, if they're double E bonds, they're likely paying you about 0.1%. And, you know, you can do better than that in a high yield savings account. You could get at least, you know, 0.5%, so a half of 1% a year, with a completely liquid savings account that's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. Now, you mentioned the economy and whether or not the U.S., you know, will be able to back any of this down the road, whether that's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is part of the U.S. government, or, you know, backing their bonds, government-issued bonds. And I would say, you know, if you look at it, you know, trusting in the United States government, obviously our trust and faith is in the Lord. But as far as economies go around the world, we are still the biggest and the strongest. The dollar is still, despite our challenges and the debt that we have in this country and inflation and some of the other headwinds, still the strongest currency, which is why even in the financial crisis of 2008-2009, you saw the dollar rally because there really is no viable alternative when you look around the world. Doesn't mean we don't have to be wise as a nation in terms of how we handle our monetary policy, but it does mean that we still have incredible strength as a nation, economically, monetarily, and otherwise. And I believe as we have to make some of the hard decisions, Lord willing, in the days ahead, we will. And so I would think in terms of where you put your money so you're not losing purchasing power, because remember, with inflation, money that's not working for you is actually losing value every month. I think there's a greater risk there then there is a risk that the U.S. government will default on its bonds or have some sort of collapse of the financial system or economically. As we evaluate risk, again, with our trust squarely placed in the Lord, as we evaluate risk, I think there's a larger risk of you seeing that purchasing power eroded over time because of the inflation and because you're just not earning a whole lot. So if it were me, I would look at cashing these in and see where you could position it, by still having U.S. government backing through FDIC, but where you could get instead of 0.1%, 0.5%. You have the ability to redeem a U.S. savings bond anytime you'd like, provided at least a year's passed since you purchased it. It sounds like it has. You perhaps will give up a little bit of interest when you do, but the place to evaluate that is at treasurydirect.gov. That's the government's website for savings bonds for the U.S. Treasury, treasurydirect.gov. And you could look at the individual CUSIPs and see exactly what the status of these bonds is. And you can also find out if they're still earning interest. There's a button that says, are your Treasury securities still earning interest? And it'll tell you very plainly. So I'd check that out and consider perhaps redeeming these and seeing if you could find a bit more yield somewhere else. I hope that helps you. We appreciate you calling today. Let's head to, looks like Brownsburg, Indiana, WGNR. Hi, Mark. How can I help you?
How you doing, sir? Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
My question is this, try to keep it short. I've put earnest money down on a house, and they're building it. And as I'm looking at them building, some of the craftsmanship is substandard. What avenue do I have to, rebut this?
Yeah. Well, obviously, you have a contract. You have earnest money down. And I would talk to an attorney about that, a real estate attorney, to evaluate both the contract to see what legal remedies you have for them to correct whatever issues are there, and or the ability to pull out of the contract if you're just not happy. I would start with the language of that contract and have a professional who represents you, an attorney, take a look at what your rights are and what's spelled out in the contract in terms of being able to remedy what it is that's going on here in terms of you not feeling like the craftsmanship and work is being done to your standards. And all of that will be described as a legal matter in that contract, so you know what your rights are, and then you'll need to proceed however you see fit. Obviously, they want to get this job done and be paid in full beyond just the earnest money, so there's an incentive for them to correct whatever is going on here. Your incentive is not to have to walk away and lose the earnest money, and hopefully you'll be able to come to a resolution on that. So I would start with the contract, find a godly real estate or contract attorney to assist you, and let us know how that turns out, Mark. We appreciate your call today, and I'm so sorry to hear about the challenges you're facing. Folks, we've got more to come on MoneyWise Live. In fact, I'm going to stay after for a little bit today. Got a few extra minutes, so I'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open. We'll be right back. Welcome back to MoneyWise Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. In just a moment, we'll head back to the phones. But first, it's Monday, which means we're joined by our good friend Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer of Crossmark Global Investments, where investments and values intersect. You can learn more about Crossmark Global and the funds that Bob manages at crossmarkglobal.com. Bob, markets been interesting as of late. What's catching your attention as you look out over the economic and market landscape?
The yo-yo nature of the market. Since we last talked, we had 3 up days and 2 down days. That's the pattern we've been experiencing. The straight up that lasted 18 months has given way to sidewise chop. And the reason is it's no longer just Katie bar the door, the economy and the earnings are indescribably good, and we're going up. Not that that's gone. It's just slowed somewhat. And this, quote, transitory inflation doesn't seem to want to be very transitory. We have the fiscal chaos in Washington, D.C. We have uncertainty about not just what the Fed's going to do, but who the Fed chair is going to be. So things have turned a bit mixed, and so the market has as well, Rob.
Yeah. I noticed in your Dahl's deliberations this week, Bob, you made reference to the fact that 45% of earnings calls for Q2 mentioned inflation, which means these corporations are taking note of higher costs.
Absolutely. That's in the context of about a quarter that mention it typically over time. So almost double the amount. Inflation is an issue. You know, all you have to do is live life and go to the supermarket or the gas station to figure that out. It's not that hard. And wages are moving up. And I've said on this program before, wage rate inflation is the most insidious, hardest to root out of the system. So look, I'm not talking about runaway inflation. I'm just talking about unlike the last decade where it's been 0 to 2%, I think we're in the 2 to 4 zone. Let's just pick a number of 3. And that's very different from where we've been, not just for consumers who live life, but also for markets.
Yeah, Bob, last time you were here, we talked about supply problems. Let's talk about perhaps some good news. COVID cases declining, maybe an end to the supply problems, or at least the beginning of the end. And you've talked about consumer confidence being a sign that, you know, we may be starting to turn when it bottoms out, and perhaps we're seeing some of that. What are the good things that you're seeing out there?
You just mentioned three very important ones, but I'd add to that list that while earnings growth is not going to be 89% like it was in the second quarter, it's still going to be way above normal. Let's suppose, to use a round number, it's up 20% in the third quarter. I need to remind all of us that the long-term average is slightly less than 10. So profit growth is still going to be double. We have a good economy, and we have good earnings to feed that as well. And while interest rates are up some out the curve, they're still low, which is an incentive for people to borrow money and do business. So we can't get too negative about things, but then the bear will come back and say, Bob, but the market knows that. So that's why it's selling at 20-plus P.E. ratio. And they're right. And I come back to the yin and the yang, the up and the down, the choppy sideways action.
Yeah. Bob, last question. As a Christ follower, you know, a lot of believers right now are discouraged just what's going on in the political climate, economically. They see the decisions we're making, the debt skyrocketing, the loose money. They're getting concerned, and I think perhaps in some cases fearful about where the U.S. is headed. How do you evaluate the U.S., our strength as a nation economically vis-a-vis the rest of the world? And, you know, we know the end of the story as believers, and so how does that factor into it?
Yeah. How many hours do I have to answer this great question? there are so many cross currents and troublesome items on the agenda. Look, you and I both have heard from Christians for, I think it's decades now. What about the debt? What about the deficits? And that's proved to be something not worth paying attention to as investors. But there will be a day of reckoning. We are borrowing from the future. And interest rates won't go down forever. We don't need high interest rates for interest expense as a percentage of our federal budget to be an issue. So I agree with the concerned people to say, there's some trends out there that bother me a bunch economically and, can I say, morally. And we've got to keep our pulse on that. We need to be salt and light. We need to get the church to be united around some of these key biblical issues that God cares about big time.
Yeah. Is it fair to say, Bob, that there's a greater risk in pulling out completely in terms of the purchasing power eroding with inflation versus the actual risk of our economy coming tumbling down?
Yeah, thank you for bringing it to the markets. No question. Look, because markets have done so well, I say if you've enjoyed doubling your money in the last 18 months in the stock market, taking a little off the table is fine. But don't push the panic button and sell everything because you think the U.S. is going to hell in a handbasket. If it is, the good news is we do know the end of the story. But in the meantime, we've got an economy that's doing reasonably well. You need some equity investments in your portfolio.
Yeah. Bob, thanks for stopping by. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All the best. Bye-bye.
All right. Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer of Crossmark Global Investments. Bob joins us each Monday afternoon, and we're grateful for his insights. Let's head back to the phones. Therese is, if I'm saying that right, Chicago, Illinois. Therese, how can I help you?
I'm inheriting a house from my sister and brother-in-law who passed away 14 months ago, and we're going to sell it, and I'm just curious what I should do with. It's probably going to be about $80,000 of inheritance money, and I didn't know since it's 14 months since they passed, if it's still considered an inheritance to me for my taxes and that, and if I should put it down on my mortgage or what I should do with it.
Yeah, that's a great question. So this was given to you as a part of the will, and yes. It's just taken this long for the probate process to occur. Is that right?
Well, yeah, sort of. My brothers and sisters are part of it with me, and we're just now deciding to sell the house. So
I see. So the the cost basis is going to be as of the date of death, and so any increase since that time would obviously be considered capital gains, and you're going to have to look at that. Beyond that, in terms of how you should handle these funds, I think you've just got to go back to looking at the priority use based on your current financial situation. Tell me this. Do you have an emergency fund, and what about consumer debt that you have?
The only debt I have is we have one car loan and our mortgage. We have an emergency fund. We have our IRAs, and we have our retirement fund. We're looking like 3 years we're going to be retiring. So the biggest debt we have is the mortgage is $142,000, and my car has probably $30,000.
Okay, and how many months worth of expenses do you say roughly you have in savings?
6 months.
Okay, great. And so you've obviously are living within your means. You're continuing to put money toward retirement, and you believe you're on track at this point in terms of having the funds you need to maintain your lifestyle once you fully retire?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I like the idea of, apart from any giving you'd like to do out of this money, I love the idea of you accelerating that mortgage payoff, because if you've got debt under control and you're on track to get that continued to be paid down, obviously we can get that car paid off. You've got 6 months of reserves. You feel like you're on track for your retirement savings. If we could go ahead and accelerate that home payoff so that when you retire, you're completely debt-free, including the house and the car, that just means your monthly lifestyle expense is even lower, which gives you even more freedom and flexibility because you don't need as much money in retirement, which is a great thing, and not to mention the peace of mind that comes from being completely unencumbered. So just based on the information I have, I'd proceed with paying that home mortgage down.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. We appreciate your call today. Quickly to Franklin, Tennessee, a beautiful part of the country. Hi, Sherry. How can I help you?
Hey, Rob. Yes, I am being forced to have to leave the job that I'm in right now, and I have a Roth IRA from a previous job that I transferred, I rolled over. But since I'm getting close to retirement age, my question is, do I need to continue to put money into the Roth IRA that I rolled over, the Roth IRA that we started out a year ago, or put into the traditional IRA that I rolled over, or do I need to put into both?
Yeah, and what are you concerned about, Sherry, in particular? Is it something related to Social Security or where you're going to get the most tax benefit? What are you thinking about?
All of the above. I just kind of want to know my options.
Yeah, so you're continuing to work. You just have a new employer, is that right?
Well, I'm trying to find another job because of health issues, I've had to leave the job I'm on.
I see. Okay, very good. Well, I think the key is, as far as Social Security is concerned, they don't care how many jobs you have. And, really all that matters is that you contribute into the system, and they're going to base your Social Security benefits based on your highest 35 years of earnings on your record. So any year that you earn higher than a previous year among those highest 35, it's going to benefit you over time. In terms of, you know, continuing to fund retirement, I would just be systematic in funding that account. And given that you're fairly close to retirement, I'd probably opt for the traditional IRA, which gives you the current tax benefit, as opposed to the Roth, which will, you know, typically is most advantaged when you have a long time to let that compound. Stay on the line. We'll talk just a bit more off the air and make sure we get all your questions answered because we are out of time, but I appreciate your call. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thank you for stopping by today. Thank you for listening and being a part of the program. I want to say thank you to my team, Amy, Dan, and Jim Henry. Thank you for being here. Come back and join us tomorrow, will you? I'll be here. We'll look for you then. God bless you.